seat because it was so new. Some of the control seats hadn't had the plastic wrapping taken off yet. The cabin was mostly white, oblong, and about the size of a smallish restaurant. In fact, it wasn't perfectly oblong. The two long walls were raked around in a slight parallel curve, and all the angles and corners of the cabin were contoured in excitingly chunky shapes. The truth of the matter is that it would have been a great deal simpler and more practical to build the cabin as an ordinary three-dimensional oblong room, but then the designers would have got miserable. As it was, the cabin looked excitingly purposeful, with large video screens ranged over the control and guidance system panels on the concave wall, and long banks of computers set into the convex wall. In one corner, a robot sat humped, its gleaming brushed steel head hanging loosely between its gleaming brushed steel knees. It, too, was fairly new, but though it was beautifully constructed and polished, it somehow looked as if the various parts of its more or less humanoid body didn't quite fit properly. In fact, they fitted perfectly well, but something in its bearing suggested that they might have fitted better. Zaphod Beeblebrox paced nervously up and down the cabin, brushing his hands over pieces of gleaming equipment and giggling with excitement. Trillian sat hunched over a clump of instruments reading off figures. Her voice was carried round the PA system of the whole ship.
5-1 against them falling, 4-1 against them falling. 3-1, 2-1, probability factor of 1-1, we have normality. I repeat, we have normality.
She turned her microphone off, then turned it back on with a slight smile and continued.
Anything you still can't cope with is therefore your own problem. Please relax, you will be sent for soon.
Who are they, Trillian?
Just a couple of guys we seem to have picked up in open space.
Yeah, well,
section ZZ9, plural Z Alpha.
Yeah. Well, that's a very sweet thought, Trillian. But do you really think this wise under the circumstances? I mean, here we are on the run, and everybody must have the police in half the galaxy after us by now. If we stop to pick up hitchhikers. Okay, so 10 out of 10 for style, but minus several million for good thinking, huh?
He tapped irritably at a control panel. Trillian quietly moved his hand before he tapped anything important. Whatever Zaphod's qualities of mind might include, dash, bravado, conceit, he was mechanically inept and could easily blow the ship up with an extravagant gesture. Trillian had come to suspect that the main reason he had had such a wild and successful life was that he'd never really understood the significance of anything he did.
Zaphod, they were floating unprotected in open space. You wouldn't want them to have died, would you?
Well, you know, not really.
Not really die, but...
Well, maybe someone else might have picked them up later.
A second later and they would have been dead.
Yeah, so if you'd taken the trouble to think about the problem a bit longer, it would have gone away.
You'd have been happy to let them die?
Well, you know, not really happy.
Anyway, I didn't pick them up.
What do you mean? Who picked them up?
The ship did.
Huh?
The ship did, all by itself.
What?
While we were in improbability drive.
But that's incredible.
No, Zaphod, just very, very improbable.
Oh, yeah.
Look, Zaphod, don't worry about the aliens. They're just a couple of guys, I expect. I'll send the robot down to get them and bring them up here. Hey, Marvin!
In the corner, the robot's head swung up sharply, but then wobbled about imperceptibly. It pulled itself up to its feet as if it was about 5 pounds heavier than it actually was, and made what an outside observer would have thought was a heroic effort to cross the room. It stopped in front of Trillian and seemed to stare through her left shoulder.
I think you ought to know. I'm feeling very depressed.
Oh.
Well, here's something to occupy you and keep your mind off things.
It won't work. I have an exceptionally large mind.
Marvin!
All right. What do you want me to do?
Go down to number 2 entry bay and bring me the 2 aliens up here under surveillance.
With a microsecond pause and a finely calculated micromodulated pitch and timbre, nothing you could actually take offense at, Marvin managed to convey his utter contempt and horror of all things human.
Just that?
Yes.
I won't enjoy it.
She's not asking you to enjoy it, just do it, will you?
All right.
Marvin, like the tolling of a great cracked bell.
I'll do it.
Great, good, thanks.
Marvin turned and lifted his flat-topped triangular red eyes up toward him.
I'm not getting you down at all, am I?
No, no, Marvin, that's just fine, really.
I wouldn't like to think I was getting you down.
No, don't worry about that. You just act as comes naturally and everything will be just fine.
You're sure you don't mind?
No, no, Marvin, that's just fine, really, just part of life.
Marvin flashed her an electronic look.
Life? Don't talk to me about life.
He turned hopelessly on his heel and lugged himself out of the cabin. With a satisfied hum and click, the door closed behind him.
I don't think I can stand that robot much longer, Zaphod.
The Encyclopedia Galactica defines a robot as a mechanical apparatus designed to do the work of a man. The marketing division of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation defines a robot as your plastic pal who's fun to be with. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy defines the marketing division of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation as a bunch of mindless jerks who'll be the first against the wall when the revolution comes. With a footnote to the effect that the editors would welcome applications from anyone interested in taking over the post of robotics correspondent. Curiously enough, in an edition of the Encyclopedia Galactica that had the good fortune to fall through a time warp from 1,000 years in the future, defined the marketing division of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation as a bunch of mindless jerks who were the first against the wall when the revolution came.
The pink cubicle had winked out of existence. The monkeys had sunk away to a better dimension. Ford and Arthur found themselves in the embarkation area of the ship. It was rather smart.
I think this ship's brand new.
How can you tell? Have you got some kind of exotic device for measuring the age of metal?
No. I just found a sales brochure lying on the floor. It's a lot of this, the universe can be your stuff. Ah, look, I was right. It says, sensational new breakthrough in improbability physics. As soon as the ship's drive reaches infinite improbability, it passes through every point in the universe. Be the envy of other major governments. Wow, this is big league stuff.
Ford hunted excitedly through the technical specs of the ship, occasionally gasping with astonishment at what he read. Clearly, galactic astrotechnology had moved ahead during the years of his exile. Arthur listened for a short while, but being unable to understand the vast majority of what Ford was saying, he began to let his mind wander, trailing his fingers along the edge of an incomprehensible computer bank. He reached out and pressed an invitingly large red button on a nearby panel. The panel lit up with the words, "Please do not press this button again." He shook himself.
Listen, they make a big thing of the ship's cybernetics. A new generation of Sirius Cybernetic Corporation robots and computers with the new GPP feature.
GPP feature? What's that?
Oh, it says genuine people personalities.
Oh, sounds ghastly.
It is.
They spun around and saw an abject steel man standing hunched in the doorway.
What?
Ghastly. It all is. Absolutely ghastly. Just don't even talk about it. Look at this door.
He stepped through the door. The irony circuits cut into his voice modulator as he mimicked the style of the sales brochure.
All the doors in this spaceship have a cheerful and sunny disposition. It is their pleasure to open for you, and their satisfaction to close again with the knowledge of a job well done.
As the door closed behind them, it became apparent that it did have indeed a satisfied, sigh-like quality to it. It said. Marvin regarded it with cold loathing, while his logic circuits chattered with disgust and tinkered with the concept of directing physical violence against it. Further circuits cut in, saying, "Why bother? What's the point? Nothing is worth getting involved in. Further circuits amused themselves by analyzing the molecular components of the door and of the humanoid's brain cells. For a quick encore, they measured the level of hydrogen emissions in the surrounding cubic parsec of space and then shut down again in boredom. A spasm of despair shook the robot's body as he turned.
Come on. I've been ordered to take you down to the bridge. Here I am, brain the size of a planet, and they asked me to take you down to the bridge. Call that job satisfaction? Because I don't.
He turned and walked back to the hated door.
Excuse me, which government owns this ship?
Marvin ignored him.
You watch this door. It's about to open again. I can tell by the intolerable air of smugness it suddenly generates.
With an ingratiating little whine, the door slid open again, and Marvin stomped through.
Come on.
The others followed quickly, and the door slid back into place with pleased little clicks and whirs.
Thank you, the marketing division of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation.
Marvin trudged desolately up the gleaming curved corridor that stretched out before them.
Let's build robots with genuine people personalities, they said. So they tried it out with me. I'm a personality prototype. You can tell, can't you?
Ford and Arthur muttered embarrassed little disclaimers.
I hate that door. I'm not getting you down at all, am I?
Which government?
No government owns it. It's been stolen.
Stolen?
Stolen?
Who by?
Zaphod Beeblebrox.
Something extraordinary happened to Ford's face. At least five entirely separate and distinct expressions of shock and amazement piled up on it in a jumbled mess. His left leg, which was in mid-stride, seemed to have difficulty in finding the floor again. He stared at the robot and tried to disentangle some dartoid muscles.
Zaphod Beeblebrox?
Sorry, did I say something wrong? Pardon me for breathing. Which I never do anyway, so I don't know why I bother to say it. Oh, God, I'm so depressed. Here's another of those self-satisfied doors. Life! Don't talk to me about life.
We interrupt this broadcast of Merritt Theater's production of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy to bring you a message of outstanding unimportance. Flash! In unequal performance above and beyond all common sense, the National Endowment for the Farts has unanimously voted to award the coveted brown stained cup to Ray Honda McKeever for magnificence in sound, timing, and unmatched aroma in his ever-searching but dominant quest for the basest ravaging of the senses. This station wishes to congratulate Ray H. for his endeavors, and we are lucky enough to have him here in the studio tonight. Ray, are you going to fart for us?
Yeah, sure. Pull my finger.
No. Get out of here. Get this guy out of here. Come on.
The management of KSLM would like to apologize for that last public service announcement. Both our station broadcasting directors and program administration heads have been sacked. And a board of inquiry will proceed to delve into a proper punishment for all those involved. Once again, we apologize for the brash and base texture of our last public service announcement. We now return you to our regularly scheduled program.
Excuse me.
Chapter 12. A loud clatter of gunk music flooded through the Heart of Gold cabin as Zaphod searched the sub-ether radio wave bands for news of himself. The machine was rather difficult to operate. For years, radios had been operated by means of pressing buttons and turning dials. Then, as the technology became more sophisticated, the controls were made touch-sensitive. You merely had to brush the panels with your fingers. Now all you had to do was wave your hand in the general direction of the components and hold. It saved a lot of muscular expenditure, of course, but meant that you had to sit infuriatingly still if you wanted to keep listening to the same program. Zaphod waved a hand and the channel switched again. More gunk music, but this time it was a background to a news announcement. The news was always heavily edited to fit the rhythms of the music.
And news reports brought to you here on the sub-ether waveband, broadcasting around the galaxy around the clock. And we'll be saying a big hello to all intelligent life forms everywhere, plus Holden Village. And to everyone else out there, the secret is to bang the rocks together, guys. And of course, the big news story tonight is the sensational theft of the new improbability drive prototype ship by none other than Galactic President Zaphod Beeblebrox. And the question everyone's asking is, has the Big Z finally flipped? Beeblebrox, the man who invented the Pangalactic Gargle Blaster, ex-confidence trickster, once described by Eccentrico Gallimbutz as the best bang since the big one, and recently voted the worst-dressed sentient being in the known universe for the seventh time. Has he got an answer this time? We asked his private brain care specialist, Gag Halfrent. Well, Zaphod's just this guy, you know?
But he got no further because an electric pencil flew across the cabin and threw the radio's on-off sensitive airspace. Zaphod turned and glared at Trillian. She had thrown the pencil.
Now what'd you do that for?
Trillian was tapping her finger on a screen full of figures.
I've just thought of something.
Yeah, worth interrupting the news bulletin about me for?
You hear enough about yourself as it is.
Hey, I'm very insecure, we know that.
Can we drop your ego for a moment? This is important.
Hey, if there's anything more important than my ego around, I want it caught and shot now.
Listen, we picked up those couple of guys.
What couple of guys?
The couple of guys we picked up.
Oh, yeah, those couple of guys.
We picked them up in Sector ZZ9, Plural Z Alpha.
Yeah?
Does that mean anything to you?
ZZ9, Plural Z Alpha, ZZ9, Plural D Alpha.
Well?
What does the Z mean?
Which one?
Anyone.
One of the major difficulties Trillian experienced in his relationship with Zaphod was learning to distinguish between him pretending to be stupid just to get people off their guard, pretending to be stupid because he couldn't be bothered to think and wanted someone else to do it for him, pretending to be outrageously stupid to hide the fact that he actually didn't understand what was going on, and really being genuinely stupid. He was renowned for being amazingly clever, and quite clearly was so, but not all the time, which obviously worried him, hence the act. He preferred people to be puzzled rather than contemptuous. This, above all, appeared to Trillian to be genuinely stupid, but she could no longer be bothered to argue about it. She sighed and punched up a star map on the vision screen so she could make it simple for him, whatever his reasons for wanting it to be that way.
There, right there.
Hey, yeah.
Well?
Well, what?
Parts of the inside of her head screamed at other parts of the inside of her head.
It's the same sector you originally picked me up in.
He looked at her and then looked back at the screen.
Yeah. Now that is wild. We should have zapped straight through the middle of the Horsehead Nebula. How'd we come to be here? I mean, that's nowhere.
Improbability drive. You explained it to me yourself. We pass through every point in the universe. You know that.
Yeah, but that's one wild coincidence, isn't it?
Yes.
Picking up someone at that point? I mean, I have a whole universe to choose from? That's just too... Yeah, I want to work this out. Computer!
The Sirius cybernetics shipboard computer, which controlled and permeated every particle of the ship, switched into communication mode.
Hi there.
It spontaneously spewed out a tiny ribbon of ticker tape, just for the record. The ticker tape said, "Hi there."
Oh, God.
The computer continued, brash and cheery, as if it were selling detergent.
I want you to know that whatever your problem, I am here to help you solve it.
Yeah. Look, I think I'll just use a piece of paper.
Sure thing. I understand. If you ever want...
Shut up.
Okay.
Zaphod and Trillian pored over the figures that the improbability flight path scanner flashed silently up in front of them.
Can we work this out from their point of view, what the improbability of the rescue was?
Yes, that's a constant. 2 to the power of 276,709 to 1 again.
That's high. They're two lucky, lucky guys.
Yeah.
but relative to what we were doing when the ship picked them up?
Trillian punched up the figures. They showed a 2 to the power of infinity minus 1 to 1 against. An irrational number that only has a conventional meaning in improbability physics.
It's pretty low.
Yes.
That's one big whack of improbability that's got to be accounted for. Mm-hmm. Something pretty improbable has got to show up on a balance sheet. It's all going to add up to a pretty sum.
Zaphod scribbled a few times, crossed the sums out, and threw the pencil away.
Ah, monkey dude. Can't work it out.
Well?
Zaphod knocked his two heads together in irritation and gritted his teeth.
Okay. Computer!
Why, hello there. All I want to do is make your day nicer.
Yeah. Well, shut up and work something out.
Sure thing. You want a probability forecast based on
improbability data, yes.
Okay. Here's an interesting little notion. Did you realize that most people's lives are governed by telephone numbers?
A pained look crawled across one of Zaphod's faces and on to the other one.
No, but you will when I tell you that.
She scribbled at the buttons on the improbability flight path screen.
Telephone number? Did that thing say telephone number?
Numbers flashed up on the screen. The computer had paused politely, but now it continued.
What I was about to say was that...
Don't bother, please.
But what if...
I don't know, but those aliens, they're on the way up to the bridge with that wretched robot. Can we pick them up on any monitor cameras?
Marvin trudged on down the corridor, still moaning.
And then, of course, I've got this terrible pain, and all the diodes down my left-hand side.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. I mean, I've asked for them to be replaced, but no one ever listens.
I can imagine.
Vague whistling and humming noises were coming from Ford.
Well, do we go through?
Suddenly, Marvin stopped and held up a hand.
You know what's happened now, of course.
No, what?
We've arrived at another of those doors.
There was a sliding door let into the side of the corridor. Marvin eyed it suspiciously.
Well, did we go through?
Then we got through. Yes, this is the entrance to the bridge. I was told to take you to the bridge. Probably the highest demand that will be made on my intellectual capacities today, I shouldn't wonder.
Slowly, with great loathing, he stepped toward the door like a hunter stalking his prey. Suddenly, it split open.
Thank you for making a simple door very happy.
Funny how just when you think life can't possibly get any worse, it suddenly does.
He heaved himself through the door and left Ford and Arthur staring at each other and shrugging their shoulders. From inside, they heard Marvin's voice again.
I suppose you want to see the aliens now. Do you want me to sit in a corner and rust, or just fall apart where I'm standing?
Yeah, just show them in, would you, Marvin?
Arthur looked at Ford and was astonished to see him laughing.
What?
Shh. Come on in.
He stepped through the bridge. Arthur followed him in nervously and was astonished to see a man lolling back in a chair with his feet on a control console, picking the teeth in his right hand head with his left hand. The right hand head seemed to be thoroughly preoccupied with his task, but the left hand one was grinning a broad, relaxed, nonchalant grin. The number of things that Arthur couldn't believe he was seeing was fairly large. His jaw flopped about at a loose end for a while. The peculiar man waved a lazy wave at Ford, and with an appalling affectionate nonchalance, he said,
Ford, how are you? Glad you could drop in.
Ford was not going to be outcooled.
Sapphire, great to see you. You're looking well. The extra arm suits you. Nice ship you stole on.
Arthur goggled at him.
You mean you know this guy? Know him? He's... Oh, Sapphire, this is a friend of mine, Arthur Dent. I saved him when his planet blew up.
Well, sure. Hi, Arthur. Glad you can make it.
His right-hand head looked around casually, said hi, and went back to having his tea picked.
And Arthur, this is my semi-cousin, Zaphod.
We've met.
When you're cruising down the road in the fast lane, and you lazily sail past a few hard-driving cars and are feeling pretty pleased with yourself, and then accidentally change down from fourth to first instead of third, thus making your engine leap out of your hood in a rather ugly mess, it tends to throw you off your stride in much the same way that this remark threw Ford Prefect off his.
What? I said we've met!
That thought gave an awkward start of surprise and jabbed at Gumbly Blind.
Have we? What?
Ford rounded on Arthur with an angry flash in his eyes. Now he felt he was back on home ground. He suddenly began to resent having lumbered himself with this ignorant primitive who knew as much about the affairs of the galaxy as this London-based gnat knew about life in Peking.
What do you mean you've met? This is Zaphod Beaglebox from Beetlejuice 5. You know, not Bloody Martin Smith from Croydon.
I don't care. We've met, haven't we, Zaphod Beaglebox? Or should I say, Phil?
What?
You'll have to remind me. I have a terrible memory for species. It was at a party.
Yeah, well, I doubt that. Cool it, will you, Arthur?
A party 6 months ago on Earth. England.
Zaphod shook his head with a tight-lipped smile.
London. Islington.
Oh, that party.
This wasn't fair on Ford at all. He looked backward and forward between Arthur and Zaphod.
What? You don't mean to say that you've been on that miserable little planet as well, do you?
No, of course not. Well, I may have dropped him briefly, you know, on the way somewhere.
But I was stuck there for 15 years.
I didn't know that, did I?
But what were you doing there?
Well, I was just having a look about, you know. He was a gatecrasher at a party.
Oh, a fancy dress party. It would have to be, wouldn't it?
At this party was a girl. Well, look, it doesn't matter now. The whole planet has gone up in smoke anyway.
I wish you'd stop sulking about that bloody planet. Who was the lady?
Oh, just somebody. Well, all right, I wasn't doing very well with her. I've been trying all evening. Hell, she was something, though. Beautiful, charming, devastatingly intelligent. At last, I got her to myself for a bit and was plying her with a bit of my talk, you know, when this friend of yours barges up and says, Hey, Dom! Does this guy bore you? Why don't you come talk to me instead? I'm from a different planet.
I never saw her again. Zaphon?
Yes!
Arthur glared at him and tried not to feel foolish.
He's the only one who had two arms. Well, he did have two arms there and one head. And he called himself Phil, but...
But you must admit he did turn out to be from another planet.
Trillian wandered into sight at the other end of the bridge. She gave Arthur a pleasant smile which settled on him like a ton of brick, and then turned her attention to the ship's controls again. There was silence for a few seconds, and then out of the scrambled mess of Arthur's brain, called some words.
Jerusha McMillan, what are you doing here?
Same as you. I hitched the lift. After all, with a degree in math and another in astrophysics, what else was there to do? It was either that or the unemployment line.
The computer chattered again.
Infinity minus one. Improbability sum now complete.
Zaphod looked at him, at Ford, at Arthur, and then at Trillian. Trillian, is this sort of thing going to happen every time we use the improbability drive?
Very probably, I'm afraid. And that's the end of part three of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Meet us next week at the same time and same channel with Marmot Theater. Thanks for listening tonight. And we'd like to thank you for all being here, making it through all of that wonderful white stuff outside. And for all the mavericks in the world, whatever they may do. Thanks for coming tonight, and see you next week. This is Marmot Theater signing.